Earplay is made possible by grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. A series of contemporary plays for radio. Earplay.
This week, Earplay presents the BBC production of Priest Penitent by Wally K. Daly. Daly, born in Northeast England, has been a steelworker apprentice, actor, singer, and comedian. His first play to be produced by the BBC was Whistling Wally, and he has since had seven others produced for British radio. He has also written three musicals, which premiered at the Chichester Festival Theatre in England. Priest Penitent by Wally K. Daly.
Ah. Saturday night. I love Saturday night. Confession night. One of the perks of the job, as you might say. Saturday night. I always come down half an hour early. Enjoy the expectation of sin to be revealed. I love the tension. I should imagine a bit like doing the pools. You never know when your coupon's going to come up and you're going to win a big one. A rape. A bit of bestiality. Something like that. Not that I ever do, of course. Not here. The problem with poor parishes is that the parishioners have got no imagination, no spirit of adventure. You get a much better class of sin in rich communities. The parish I used to be at was exceptional. I mean, there they really did make an effort. Different class of people, you see. Well-read. Open to new influences. You know, I had one man who actually... But the privacy of confession is inviolable. Did you know that? Not to be discussed. Not even with your fellow priest. Unless, of course, it's something really funny. Then you can't stop yourself, can you? Well, no, I can't. We've had some lovely laughs together, Father O'Hagan and I. I'll never forget the time old Toby Jones tried to have it off with a chicken. Laugh, and then he slipped my cassock. But there, mustn't talk about it. Inviolable. Saturday night. Now, have I got everything? Sandwich in case I get peckish halfway through. Book in case it gets intolerably boring. We can get boring. It really can. I mean, you'd think that people revealing their all would be a constant source of entertainment, wouldn't you? Dark secrets of the soul spoken in whispers, but it can get surprisingly boring. Hence the book. And this little torch. Mind you, the amount of manipulation required to read without being twigged by the confessor is such that I do give rather severe penances if I had to resort to the book. Actually, I always give large penances for boring sins in any case. But as I see it, if they're going to force me to waste half of my favorite evening stifling yawns, they can pay the price with their knees. The fastest you can say a whole rosary is about 5 minutes, even if you smash away at it. I think the record's about 4 minutes, 25 seconds. So I punish them pro rata. 10 minutes boredom, 2 rosaries, 15 minutes boredom, 3. Get the idea? Very just. Anyway, there's always the hope that big penances will drive them into going to Father O'Hagan the next week. Vote with their feet, as it were. Drive them across the nave. That's the answer. Let him have the boring ones. I don't care. Leave me room for more juices. Now the children are different. The sins of the children are small, but never boring. They bring a freshness and vitality to them, an air of adventure in their voices as they confess, an amazement at their own discovery. Dipping their toes carefully into the sea of sin, testing the texture of it, feeling their way gently until puberty, when they can take the final plunge, and then it's all worthwhile. Their voices, full of a strange mixture of pride and remorse, the first time they confess, "Forgive me, Father, but I had a bit last night." The number of times I've been tempted to say, "Well done, you finally made it." Oh, yes, it's fascinating watching their sins mature, you know. At times, I've been tempted to write a sort of Dr. Spock of sin. I'm sure there'd be a market for it. Judge the intellect of your child by the level of sinning. Is your child backward and only saying damn when he should have reached bloody? See what I mean? You see, sinning starts very young. I mean, we get babies in this church, babies who already know what sinning is all about. I know it's hard to believe, but take my word, they know what sin is all about. I've seen babies arrive at this church in their mother's arms, red-faced, hanging on to their little gesture like grim death, until the service is underway, and then picking the quietest possible moment to let out the most horrendous farts you've ever heard, causing hilarity among the congregation. Who should know better? And making me once nearly drop the host, which would have been sacrilege. I mean, I know people think the baby smiles afterwards because it's got rid of wind, but the truth is he knows he's sinned, and better still, got away with it. I mean, you can't make a baby say a penance now, can you? I mean, wish you could. I mean, I had one once spew all over my best cassock at his christening. I'd have had him on his knees for a week. Still, never mind. My time will come. We've got them for life, you know. We've got them for life. Fascinating thought, that. We've got them for life. A fascinating thought. We lead our little Catholics from their childhood to their death along a tortuous path that leads to heaven via purgatory. They are brought as babies in their mother's arms, and by the time they reach infant school, the habit is established. Mass every Sunday, a mortal sin to miss. And the habit is strengthened as they grow to youth and gain the comfort of confession. Laundromat of the Catholic soul. All dirt washed away for the price of a penance. A weekly cleansing before communion. Take the flesh of our Savior in the shape of a host into your mouth and swallow it. Show you are pure before God. Take communion, a miracle performed in front of your eyes, bred into Christ, transubstantiation. I can do that, you know. Oh, yes. Part of the job. Every morning and twice on Sundays. Shazam. Bred into Christ. Just like that. Trouble is that without a flash of lightning or something, it's a bit hard to credit that it's all actually happening. But of course it is. I mean, that's dogma. It happens. Bred into Christ. I can do it. Easy as anything. Trouble is some rebel at this age, the communion age, and let the rebellion simmer till they leave school and can make the rebellion public by not going to church. They lose sight of the true light. They get married, and if they play the game by the rules and don't cheat with pills and potions, you'll be surprised at the number who do actually cheat, you know. Anyway, if they don't cheat and they have lots more little Catholics to carry on the tradition, which I think is marvelous. Now, quite honestly, it does rather prove that we are the one true faith. The willingness of the parents to perpetuate the tradition by letting their children be brought up as Roman Catholics, well, I think it's marvellous. Been on my feet all day visiting the sick. Quite honestly, I'm sick of visiting. But it's all part of the job, mustn't grumble. Oh, marvellous. Ooh, that's better. You notice we sit while the penitent kneels, as it should be. Well, if we let them get comfortable, they'd be there all night, wouldn't they? I don't know how psychiatrists get any work done at all, having couches for their clients to lie on. I mean, I don't know how they get any work done at all. I really don't. Keep them uncomfortable, that's our motto. Helps the turnover enormously. Mind you, I wouldn't mind a couch in here for myself. Probably wouldn't get so much cramp then. Oh, I get terrible cramp. Terrible. Oh, the problems of being a priest. Once you've sat here for an hour or more, and your behind's gone to sleep, you never know what your legs are going to do. One of these days I'm going to get cramps so badly, I let out a scream that'll frighten some old dear to death before I've even given her absolution. I don't know what the form would be then. Nothing in the book about that, I've checked. I suppose I could give her a posthumous penance. Say it myself, and follow it with a quick last sacrament. Never mind, just daydreams, just daydreams. Roll on confession, let's get started. I wonder if old Mrs. Jackson will be in tonight. I hope so. I could do with a bit of a laugh. I must try to control it if she does come in. Mrs. Jackson. It's so difficult, but little Tittles. Tittles. Poor little Tittles. I'm sorry. How rude of me. I must explain. It's rude not to. Now, forget I mentioned any names, and I'll tell you the story just to prove you never know what's going to turn up on a Saturday. A certain old lady, who will be nameless, a few weeks ago arrived and knelt in the box there and started her confession. the same as she has done every week since I've been in this parish, droning on the same boring old sins that she always confesses. I was battling against dropping off to sleep, and at the same time trying to work out how large a penance would finally drive her to O'Hagan, when she stopped. And in her voice, as clear as crystal, she said, "And forgive me, Father, but I tickled the cat." "So what?" I said. "Everyone tickles a cat." "No," she said. "You don't understand. I tickled him there, Father. On his thingy." "On his what?" I said. "On his thingy," she said. "You know, his thingy." "Well, it was Tiddles. Little Tiddles, who jumps on my knee when I go round there for tea twice a week. She tickled Tiddles on his thingy." Well, laugh, I was giving myself a hernia trying to hide it. I only bit the top of my rosary trying to stop myself. And because I couldn't speak, she started to get worried and decided to clear her conscience completely. "Actually," she said, "I did it twice, Father," she said. I nearly fell out of my seat. I was rolling about. "But I won't do it again," she said. I was hysterical. Anyway, I finally got control of myself, gave her a penance of 1 hour, Father, and 1 Hail Mary, and sent her on her way. But I knew I had to confess my laughter. I mean, that's a sin, you see, to laugh while taking confession. Well, that night, it was my turn to go to Father O'Hagan across the aisle and confess. We take it in turns hearing each other's confession, you see. Well, you can't hear your own. It's a bit like reading fortunes. You can't hear your own. Anyway, it's not so bad. We've got an agreement about penances. So I went off to O'Hagan's box and I said, "Forgive me, Father, but I laughed while taking confession." Well, naturally, he said, "What caused you to commit this sin, my son?" We're very formal with each other in confession, which is only as it should be, after all. Anyway, I knew I had to tell him, as he asked, and I was dying to in any case. So, without mentioning names, I said, "Father, a certain old lady confessed that she masturbated her cat, and I couldn't help but laugh." And I sniggered a little bit at the thought and said, "Poor old Tiddles," which was very wrong of me. Well, that started him off. He guessed straight away who it was and found it just as funny as I did. And in seconds, we were both rolling about. I had to sit on my kneeling stool trying to get my breath, and I could hear O'Hagan's chamber pot going like the Trevi Fountain. He's getting on a bit, you see, so he fitted a chamber underneath his seat so he doesn't have to keep going off to visit, you know. Anyway, laughing had set him off. When I heard the tinkling, that set me off even worse. Dear, oh dear, it took 5 minutes for us both to calm down and stop laughing, and we agreed that as God has a sense of humour and would understand, we'd give each other 1 hour, Father, as a penance, promise never to do it again, and then we went off and had supper. Oh, it was a lovely Saturday. I'll always remember that one. Still, it shows we priests are only human after all. Doesn't it? How's the time? Oh, lovely. Nearly there. Oh, yes, we're human, all right. You'd be amazed. Our flesh invaded by the same desires as other people, the same temptations, perhaps even more so. Sometimes I feel our parishioners don't appreciate that. They think our theological training gives us a sort of armor plating against the temptation to sin. But we're only human. We're only human. Where perhaps we win over the average parishioner, the average layman, is in our capability to fight temptation. This is where our training helps. Our vows sustain us, our vocation supports us, our celibacy comforts us. We know our body is but a tool of the mind. Control the mind and the body will obey. And if all else fails, there's always wet dreams. A prize given by God to the good man for resisting the temptations of the flesh and the devil. A mere venial sin, if it's a sin at all. Provided you don't help it along too much, of course. I've never known a woman, and I'm proud of it. I know the function and the chemistry of it. I know the devious paths to sexual satisfaction that man can take with women. I know what poets say of women, what writers write of women. I've seen what artists paint of women. I've seen women on the screen, on the stage, in the street, and I've never yet seen a woman that I'd swap for a halfway decent wet dream. Call me a traditionalist if you will, but that's the way I am. Keep yourself pure. God will repay you. Ask anyone of the church, from parish priest to the Pope, and they'll tell you the same. You can always tell a good Christian by the state of his sheets. Funnily enough, the same test applies to married couples who want no more children. Did you know that? Oh, yes. The pill takers have immaculate sheets, not a stain. I've always thought we should have the right, as priests, to go to the houses of parishioners not producing their quota of Catholic children and say, show me your sheets. Come on, show to me. Make sure they're playing the game by the rules. But no. The ways of our parents and grandparents aren't good enough for your modern Catholic. No more decent Catholic families of 15, 16 kids anymore. If we get three in one family these days, it's a bit of an event. I mean, we feel almost as though we should invite the bishop round to give them a blessing. And this is a working-class parish. What it's like up the posh end, God only knows. So there you are. I do all I can. I do my best. Did I tell you? I wrote a song about it. Sent it off to the Catholic Herald. See if I get them to print it. Suggested they got people to sing it at wedding parties and things. Nothing came of it. I never heard any more. Nobody seems to care. Nice song. What time is it? I've got time. I'll sing you a couple of verses. They made a pill for doggies. They made a pill for men. They made a pill for women. And it started killing them. They made abortion legal. They made Dutch caps by the score. They made coils and sheaths and jellies. They soon won't be babies anymore. Oh, you Harley Street butchers, your trade is nothing new, but for sheer mass destruction, King Herod had nothing on you. So watch out, you unborn babies, with eyes of bluest blue. Watch out, you little children, the world is killing you. I think they would have gone down very well at wedding parties. Never mind. I try as best I can. Perhaps being brought up in a truly Catholic family led me to expect too much from others. A truly Catholic household, mine. God-fearing parents. Seven children in the family. Four boys, three girls. Three nuns, three priests, and a bookmaker. A truly Catholic family. And my parents would have had more if it hadn't been for Father's problem. Not for fun, because they knew their duty. A truly Catholic family. Yes, a pity about Father's problem. Now there's contraception with a vengeance. One day, it lay down and never stood up again. Not a flicker. He said it was God's way of telling him he enjoyed it too much. And accepted it. Oh, yes, a truly Catholic family. Still, mustn't get gloomy. Saturday night. Another 5 minutes, they'll all be strolling in. Big sinners and little sinners. Old ones, new ones, loved ones, neglected ones. All coming in for a quick clean-up before tomorrow. I don't know how other churches manage without confession. I really don't. I mean, we know they're not true religions, but at least they could put on a better show, couldn't they? Act in a more Christian manner. Give their members a chance to get rid of all that gunge dirtying up their souls. Still, that's their business. I wouldn't miss it for the world. I love confession. You know, sometimes I wonder how I'd react if Jesus walked in here one Saturday night while I was taking confession. Funny thought, that. Or you think of him walking into the church on a Sunday morning when the place was packed. I wonder what he'd think.
I mean, you can guess what we'd think straight away, can't you? You look round and see a long-haired, bearded, coloured bloke wearing a frock standing in the aisle. You jump to certain conclusions straight away before he even opened his mouth, wouldn't you? And then it turns out he's a foreigner. I mean, we've got a very clean parish here, you know, thank God. No coloureds, no Jews, very few Harrys, and no cross-dressers.
Apart from Mr. Thompson, who has the haberdashery shop.
So you can guess what we think of Jesus.
But what would he think of us? And the choir, the altar boys, the incense, the red light burning, snotty kids, the women with heads covered, the men with heads bared, crammed, kneeling together in the pews, the gold of the vessels gleaming on the altar, me in all my best Sunday vestments. I wonder what he'd think. He'd probably be quite impressed. Yes, I should think he would be. He was a simple man. Yes. He probably would be impressed.
We've come a long way since the catacombs. A long way.
But what would I say if he spoke? Is what if one day I took the host, said the words that change it from bread to the Spirit of Christ, and there was a great flash of light and smoke, and there he was beside me. What would I say?
I am your servant on earth. I am the bearer of the truth, leader of your flock. Most likely I'd scream the place down and run.
Still, it's a fascinating thought. What would I say?
I'd say,
Am I doing right? Is this how you want it to be?
A silly question. I mean, I know I'm doing right. I just carry out my duties, preserve the one true faith, help to create better Christians. I just follow the guidelines laid down 1,900 odd years ago by our Savior, and then pass through an unbroken line of popes to the present day. In consultation with my bishop, I stick to the guidelines. I know I am doing right.
But sometimes, just sometimes, I wonder. Take confession, for instance. Now, it's my favorite sacrament, so I won't knock it, but sometimes I wonder about it. People come back week after week with the same sins, and I keep on scrubbing them out, and they go off and commit the same sins again, and there's nothing I can do about it. Now, that can't really be good, can it? I mean, have we made too many sins? Perhaps, only perhaps, some sins. They make coils and sheaths and jellies. They soon won't be babies anymore. Oh, you Harley Street butchers, your trade is nothing new. But for sheer mass destruction, King Herod had nothing on you. So watch out, you unborn babies, with eyes of bluest blue. Watch out, you little children, the world is killing you. I think they would have gone down very well at wedding parties. Never mind. I try as best I can. Perhaps being brought up in a truly Catholic family led me to expect too much from others. A truly Catholic household, mine. God-fearing parents. 7 children in the family. 4 boys, 3 girls. 3 nuns, 3 priests, and a bookmaker. A truly Catholic family. And my parents would have had more if it hadn't been for Father's problem. Not for fun, because they knew their duty. A truly Catholic family. Yes, a pity about Father's problem. Now there's contraception with a vengeance. One day, it lay down and never stood up again. Not a flicker. He said it was God's way of telling him he enjoyed it too much. And accepted it. Oh yes, a truly Catholic family. Still, mustn't get gloomy. Saturday night. Another 5 minutes, they'll all be strolling in. Big sinners and little sinners. Old ones, new ones, loved ones and neglected ones. All coming in for a quick clean-up before tomorrow. I don't know how other churches manage without confession. I really don't. I mean, we know they're not true religions, but at least they could put on a better show, couldn't they? Act in a more Christian manner. Give their members a chance to get rid of all that gunge dirtying up their souls. Still, that's their business. I wouldn't miss it for the world. I love confession. You know, sometimes I wonder how I'd react if Jesus walked in here one Saturday night while I was taking confession. Funny thought, that. Or you think of him walking into the church on a Sunday morning when the place was packed. I wonder what he'd think.
I mean, you can guess what we'd think straight away, can't you? You look round and see a long-haired, bearded, coloured bloke wearing a frock standing in the aisle, you jump to certain conclusions straight away before he even opened his mouth, wouldn't you? And then it turns out he's a foreigner. I mean, we've got a very clean parish here, you know, thank God. No colours, no Jews, very few Hairies, and no cross-dressers. Apart from Mr. Thompson, who has the haberdashery shop. So you can guess what we think of Jesus. But what would he think of us? And the choir, the altar boys, the incense, the red light burning, snotty kids, the women with heads covered, the men with heads bared, crammed, kneeling together in the pews, the gold of the vessels gleaming on the altar, me in all my best Sunday vestments. I wonder what he'd think. He'd probably be quite impressed. Yes, I should think he would be. He was a simple man. Yes, he probably would be impressed. We've come a long way since the catacombs. A long way. But what would I say if he spoke? Yes, what if one day I took the host, said the words that change it from bread to the Spirit of Christ, and there was a great flash of light and smoke, and there he was beside me. What would I say? I am your servant on earth. I am the bearer of the truth, leader of your flock. Most likely I'd scream the place down and run.
Still, it's a fascinating thought. What would I say? I'd say, am I doing right? Is this how you want it to be?
A silly question. I mean, I know I'm doing right. I just carry out my duties, preserve the one true faith, help to create better Christians. I just follow the guidelines laid down 1,900 odd years ago by our Savior, and then pass through an unbroken line of popes to the present day. In consultation with my bishop, I stick to the guidelines. I know I am doing right.
But sometimes, just sometimes, I wonder. Take confession, for instance. Now, it's my favorite sacrament, so I won't knock it, but sometimes I wonder about it. People come back week after week with the same sins, and I keep on scrubbing them out, and they go off and commit the same sins again, and there's nothing I can do about it. Now, that can't really be good, can it? I mean, have we made too many sins? Perhaps, only perhaps, some sins shouldn't be sins at all. I mean, take swearing. Little swears, venial sins. Big swears, mortal sins. And I've got to dish out penances for them, when usually it just boils down to a lack of vocabulary. I mean, should swearing really be a sin? Or take boys playing with themselves. I mean, quite frankly, the only thing the youth of my parish have is wax and woodbines, that's it. The sum total of their life till marriage. Wax and woodbines. And they keep the score every week to get the number right when they confess. You can't stop it. They all know nowadays it doesn't really make you go blind, don't they? I even tried whispering it'll make you deaf. And they said, pardon, I shouted, it'll make you deaf. Doesn't do any good. Is it really a sin? I mean, they can't help it. It's all they have. So is it really a sin? Well, that's only two examples. Get rid of swearing and masturbation, you've got rid of 75% of my confessors without lowering the entertainment value one iota. Yes, I think I'd ask him about sin and confession. Subtly. I mean, I wouldn't just come out and say, is a wank a venial sin, a mortal sin, or no sin at all, Jesus? I mean, I'd have to be subtle. Hint round the subject. See if this is really the way he wants it to be. And I'd ask about faith. Yes, I'd ask about faith. Now, I'm a good Christian. I mean, it's obvious to everybody that I'm a good Christian. I accept and live by the teachings without question. But sometimes, there are things that even I think about. Little tiny thoughts deep down in my mind. Not doubts, just thoughts. Infallibility, for instance. Now, it's dogma, so I believe it. The Pope is infallible. But after all these years, is the Pope really still in such good contact with head office that whatever he states on policy is absolutely correct and to be believed? A mortal sin to question it? Can that be right? I mean, it's dogma, so I believe it absolutely. But I think I'd ask Jesus about that if I got the chance. Just little things, you see. Just little things. But it would be nice to hear the answer from the horse's mouth, as it were. Yes, that would be nice. Not that I'll ever get the chance. I'll just go on serving like a good priest should. Hearing confessions, saying masses, saving souls, keeping my fellow Catholics on the true path as best I can. Until I die. Hopefully, in a state of grace. Peacefully. In my bed. It's the only chink in the armor of my faith. I want to die peacefully. Not as a test of faith. Is that wrong? We Roman Catholics have had some terrible things done to us in the past, which strengthened us. And to be fair, in strength, we've done some pretty terrible things ourselves. But I feel a weakness within myself. I think I could just bring myself to inflict hurt for my faith, if it was demanded of me. I could, I think, turn the rack a little way to protect the truth from destruction. But I know There is a weakness. I don't think I could stand up and die for my belief. I don't think I have the courage. Here are the lions. Are you a Christian? No. Here are the men with guns, killing in Christ's name. Tell them they are wrong. No. There is a weakness. Still, Saturday night. Mustn't get too thoughtful. Just do your job and keep your nose out of other people's business. That's the answer. Saturday night. I love Saturday night. They'll soon be here. I can hardly wait.
Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It's so many years since my last confession that I can hardly remember the proper words. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It is many years since my last confession, and I am truly sorry for my transgressions. Why? Oh, I don't know. Why does anyone stop going? So many reasons. Little ones, big ones, laziness, lack of faith, who knows? I think I probably stopped when I didn't have to face the mass register anymore, when I left school as a kid. You know, the mass register. Perhaps they don't do it now. Call the register every Friday, mass, Holy Communion and confession. Book yourself down for whatever you think you can manage, then come Monday morning, pay the price for your over-enthusiasm. They always call the register again Monday morning to check achievement and issue punishment. Of course, you didn't get caned for not going. You got caned for telling lies about it on Friday. Silly, isn't it? Silly thing to stop for. Perhaps that's not the reason after all. Who knows? But I stopped. And here I am again. And I don't even know how to start. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. You know, some saint or other is supposed to have said a good man sins at least 7 times a day. So you reckon on a good man sinning, what, 365 by 7, or I suppose about a couple of thousand times a year. And then in 10 years or so, he's clocked up around 20,000 sins. Now that's a good man, Father, and nobody ever accused me of being good. So, how bad am I? 2 or 3 times worse? I don't know. Let's say about 3 times as bad. You know, that works out something like 60,000 sins I haven't confessed. 60,000! You're not in a hurry to get away, are you, Father? Just tell you, in my own way. In my own way. Where do I start? A little boy wandering around the local co-op, knocking off carrots because it was exciting. Is that where it began? Dashing back with all the others to the bombed house to eat them. That must have been a sin. I had no reason to pinch food. Whereas some of the other kids did. So it probably wasn't a sin for them, who knows? Well, not as big a sin. Anyway, I don't suppose it counted for any of us. We were all too young. Below the age of reason, they say, don't they, Father? Below the age of reason. Magic words, Father. They've got a ring to them, haven't they? Below the age of reason. Hey, just think what a time we'd have had when we were young if we'd known that all we did that was wrong was scrubbed out because we were too young to understand we were doing wrong. Or perhaps we were too young to enjoy it. Perhaps that's what it means. I mean, I can remember as clear as anything when I was about 5 asking Mary Parsons to take her knickers off and let me have a feel. I can remember her taking them off. But I can't, for the life of me, remember what she felt like. So perhaps it wasn't a sin. Perhaps that's what before the age of reason means. Too young to feel feels. But the funny thing is, Father, I took those little non-sins, those before the age of reason sins, along to my first confession with me. And I knew that really they were big and frightening, so I didn't tell them. I just hid them away somewhere inside and tried not to worry about not telling them. My first confession. Funny. So long ago. A different world. And I can remember the confession even now. "Forgive me, Father," I said, "bloody 5 times last week, and I told a lie to me ma'am. That is all, and I'm sorry." You see, even then, hide it away. "You're a good boy, 1 Our Father, 1 Hail Mary, and don't do it again." And it was all over. But the next day, I had to face my first Holy Communion. And as I walked up to the altar, all those little hidden away sins that I knew were really so big floated from their hiding place in my mind and clogged up my throat. "Do you know what I mean, Father? I remember the rule, the golden rule. It's a mortal sin to take communion when not in a state of grace. A real sin. A big, black, dirty, burning, hell forever sin." And I was walking towards it in my best suit with no escape. No way of turning me back. Me mum and dad sitting there with shiny eyes watching their little boy make good. Suddenly, I was kneeling at the altar, and the priest was working his way along the kids, shoveling a host into each sin-free little mouth, too fast for my peace of mind, saying his prayer over each little angel too quickly, heading toward the devil incarnate, wearing a white shirt and a crooked red tie. New shoes, getting their toes scuffed as legs tried to run away, but couldn't move, only the toes twitching against the marble of the church floor as I knelt, and prayed that Father O'Hare would somehow be miraculously struck dead before he reached me. Just a flash of lightning or a simple thing, like the floor opening to swallow him, would do. "Please, God, let him die. Don't let him make me commit a mortal sin. I don't want to go to hell. I'm a good boy, really. I'll confess next time, I promise. Please, strike him dead. I don't want to commit a mortal sin." And suddenly, he was there. My mouth opened as though someone was pulling a string, and the host was coming towards me. I knew my mouth would burst into flame the second the Eucharist touched me tongue. I knew it, and I couldn't close my mouth to save myself. Only my eyes. Only me eyes. "It was cold, Father. A penny piece of unleavened bread sitting accusingly on me tongue. Cold. I couldn't swallow it. That was a mortal sin. I'd go to hell. I couldn't take it out. That was sacrilege. I'd go to hell. I couldn't spit it out. That was blasphemy. I'd go to hell. What could I do, Father? What could I do?" Finally, the decision was easy. The whole congregation would see if I spat it out or took it out. So, as I had to go to hell in any case, I'd go to hell secretly. I swallowed it. But there was an awful lot of sin clogging my throat, Father, drying my mouth out. The host stuck to the roof, and I dislodged it with me tongue. But it was too big to swallow, and I couldn't bite it, not the body of Christ. I couldn't bring myself to bite it, Father, even though I was going to hell in any case. So I struggled to swallow it against a rising tide of bile dredged up from somewhere inside me. I don't know where it came from. I hadn't eaten anything since the day before, but it was there, and I wanted to be sick. I wanted to be sick. But you can't, can you? You can't be sick before the altar of God. You just can't. So I had to try to swallow it down, bile and host. Swallow it down, damn you. And finally, down it went. I was a full, grown-up member of the Catholic Church. I'd taken my first communion. Is that where it began, Father? Is that where the hate began? Did I confess it? Oh, yes, I confessed it all right. I always confessed everything, finally. Always too late. You see, because I now had a bigger sin on my conscience than my before the age of reason sins. I could get rid of them, dump them in the ear of the priest. But I hung on to my big one until I had other, even bigger ones that I could carry forward to the altar. Always the same, Father, always the same. Rolling a great soot ball of mortal sin in front of me through life, collecting forgotten venial sins, by the way, wheeling it in front of me up to the altar and setting it between me and peace of mind, a as I took communion, always with a guilty heart. Every one finally confessed and forgiven too late. Except one, confessed and too small to forgive. And that one hurt, Father. That one really hurt. One day, I'd been bad. I was about 8, I think. I'd sinned and was sent to bed. It was a sunny day, I remember. The sun was shining through the window, speckling the carpet. And there was a band of light where the bottom of the window was open. And I was just lying on the bed, Father, watching the light playing on the floor, not thinking about anything much. When a little shadow blocked out a tiny segment of the light and moved about, I was so surprised I looked up. And there was a butterfly, silhouetted against the blue sky, framed by the chimneys of the works. A little miracle, Father. A butterfly. There. You see, the street where we lived was anywhere up to a mile from any decent bit of green, so to see a butterfly at all was really something. And there one was, just outside my window. Please come in, I thought, please come in. And I didn't dare move in case I'd frighten him away. And it was as if he'd heard me, Father, as if he heard me. He fluttered lower and lower down the window until he came to the gap where the window was open. And he hovered there, as if he was joking with me, having me on, pretending he wasn't going to come in, though he knew all the time he really would. And finally, he came in. He came into my bedroom, Father. A butterfly in my bedroom. I ran to close the window quick before he had a chance to escape, and turned to look at this miracle. He was beautiful, Father. Beautiful. White and patched with blue. A blue like I'd never seen before. A soft, soft Jesus blue. And he didn't care. He wasn't afraid. He was free. He explored that dingy little room and took light into every corner. He was free. Sin free. I'd closed the window, and he was still free. It was me who was trapped. I didn't consciously think about it. I still don't know the absolute second that I began to hate that beautiful butterfly, Father. But in seconds, the hate was complete. He was mocking me with his freedom. He landed on a bit of flowered wallpaper, and I took hold of him. I just crossed the room and grabbed him. I grabbed him and took hold of one of his legs. And I pulled it off. It didn't pop or crack or anything. It just came off. And I let him go. But he was still flying round the room as if nothing had happened. Still mocking to me. Still free. Can you understand that, Father? So when next he landed, I caught him and held him. A wing in each little boy finger and thumb. Held him Eucharist high above my head. I pulled his wings off. And I dropped the wings, and I saw his dust on my fingers, and I brushed it off. I collected the bits and pieces together, opened the window, and threw them out. And I longed for it to be Saturday so that I could confess. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. I said bloody 8 times last week. I lied to me ma'am twice. I killed a beautiful butterfly. You seem to be swearing a lot these days and telling more lies than you should. Go careful, my son, otherwise you'll end up in hell. And the butterfly's an insect and doesn't count, unless you enjoyed it. 3 Our Fathers and 3 Hail Marys, and try to be a good boy. The butterfly's an insect and doesn't count. The most beauty I've ever known in my whole life erased. And it didn't count. It was an insect. No penance available. No absolution possible. No forgiveness. No way of removing the torment. Unless I enjoyed it, he said.
enjoyed it. I cried myself to sleep every night for a week, Father. Every night for a week. But tears couldn't wash away the memory of the biggest sin of my life. No penance available. So, I suffered because of my religion's deficiencies. For once, it wasn't severe enough, Father. Insects should have counted. Then I could have paid my penance and got it off my chest. I mean, I didn't mind suffering, if it was fair. Like the time the teacher in infant school said it's rude to look when you go to the toilet. So I closed my eyes before I went in and peed all over Fatty Smurthwaite, and he punched me. I mean, that was suffering in a good cause, trying to keep the rules. But suffering because there was no rule to be kept seemed terribly unjust. Can you see that? It was unfair. Unfair. Too unfair for my little brain to understand. So I cried myself to sleep every night for a week. And you know, Father, I've never seen a butterfly since without remembering. It was a pity, in a way, that Father Neen wasn't around then. He would have understood, I think. Old Father Neen. He understood sin. And non-sin. In fact, he introduced us to sins that we never even dreamed existed. He would have known the penance for a boring butterfly, but unfortunately it was mainly the sexual side of sin that appealed to Father Neen. He arrived in our parish just as my age group was taking the sexual plunge, the pubescent years, pubic minds and lustful bodies. Father Neen was a gift from the gods, all right. We came to love Saturday night. We used to dash to play his smutty games in the confessional as we'd never dashed before. Pardon? Oh, no, Father, he never touched us, nothing like that. He always stayed his side of the perforations. It was all words, lovely, dirty words. He made confession a pleasure. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. I touched a girl on the chest. Oh, you wicked boy, did you put your hand inside her blouse? No, Father. Did you put your hand on her bare leg? Yes, Father. Did you touch her knee? Yes, Father. Did you touch her thigh? No, Father. You wicked boy. Say three rosaries and don't do it again. And a goal had been set for our next confession. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. I touched a girl on the chest. Oh, you wicked boy. Did you put your hand inside her blouse? Yes, Father. Oh, you wicked boy. Did you touch her leg? Yes, Father. Above the knee? Yes, Father. You touched her thigh? Yes, Father. Did you put your hand inside her knickers? No, Father. You wicked boy. Say two rosaries and don't do it again. Progressively, more difficult. But the prize seemed to be smaller penances. We enjoyed the challenge. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. I kissed the girl on the breast. You wicked boy. Did you touch her leg? Yes, Father. Above the knee? Yes, Father. You touched her thigh? Yes, Father. Did you put your hand inside her knickers? Yes, Father. Did you take her knickers off? No, Father. What a wicked boy you are. Say a rosary and don't do it again. Oh, how we loved Father Neen, leading us gently through the pathways of sexual success. We'd have got there finally in any case, I suppose, but he was a great help, was Father Neen. Yes, Father. Father Neen would have understood the pain of not getting a penance for killing a butterfly. It would have been worth 10 rosaries, at least, to him. Report him, Father? Oh, no. We didn't report Father Neen. I mean, who would we report him to? The bishop? His fellow priests? Who? And what would we report about him? We enjoyed it. They must have known in any case. There were queues of kids outside his confessional every Saturday. It became more popular than the local cinema. They must have known. But what can you say? We enjoy confession when it's Father Neen. That's no sin. But Father, was it a sin that he enjoyed our sin so much? Perhaps that's why I stopped going to confession. Perhaps it wasn't the mass register after all. Perhaps it was just Father Neen running out of ideas. But I stopped. I stopped for more years than I can remember. And now I'm back again, with a soul full of sin. Kneeling
in the womb warmth, talking to a wall. Madness. But anonymous. Why? Why tonight? Because I am my father's son. That's no answer, is it? Funny. I'm still running away from the big one, Father. Still running away. Tonight I'll tell the big one, because finally I'm frightened. Frightened of hell and frightened of God, with the bogeyman of belief racing my heart and churning my stomach. I'll tell you why I'm here tonight. I'm my father's son. On the morning of the day my father died, so many years ago, after a lifetime of living and scoffing at the beliefs he was brought up with and had put behind him, a wonderful, happy, failed Catholic. On the morning of the day my father died, he smelt his own death coming and sold his soul to God. He called the priest and made his confession and had the last sacraments. Then he died, and I despised him for it. And I never went inside a church from that day to this, because that's when my hate began. That's when I stopped going to confession. That's when I put the church behind me forever. But I found out tonight that the church can afford to sit and wait, Father. They know their training is eradicable. Fear will out. No matter how free we feel, no matter how far we travel from the true path, we all finally crawl back to the fold when we smell our own doom. We all crawl back to the fold. We all finally crawl back. Unless, by the grace of God, we die quickly. Tonight, Father, I'm crawling back. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It is many years since my last confession, and I'm truly sorry for my transgressions. I killed a man tonight, Father. I didn't mean to. I didn't know what I was doing. But you can't walk backwards and pretend something didn't happen. Put things right, can you? I killed a man tonight. Round the corner from here. I killed him. And I don't even know his name. How? I was at a party. I walked out into the kitchen to where the sandwiches were. And there was another bloke out there already. I picked up a sandwich and it was beef. And I looked at it. And just to be friendly, just to strike up a conversation, like, I said, good job it's not Friday. I'd have to throw this in the bin. Little joke. Little ex-Catholic's joke. I'd have to throw this in the bin. You're Catholic, he said. And something about his tone, something about the look in his face, rankled. So I did a sort of reverse Iscariot on him. Yes, I said, yes, I'm a Catholic. Why? And it was as if I'd touched a button, Father. He hated us. I've never seen such hate. It poured out of him. First a trickle, then a stream. As he spoke, he slowly walked towards me until our faces were within inches. Mary was a whore, he said. It poured out of him. It kept on pouring out of him. The Pope's a murderer, he said. What have we done to him to deserve this? Words coming out too quickly for his mouth to catch up with them. His tongue flicking spots of saliva at me as he spoke, spewing out anti-Catholic crap faster than my ears could take it in. What have we done to him, Father? He hated us. And I had become the church, me, the church. And the worse the words, the stronger grew my faith. He ran the gamut from the Inquisition to Belfast, and I felt the power of my belief, our belief. He had me putting bombs in prams with babies, and I was infallible, infallible. I was the Roman Catholic Church. He was an irritating insect. But I knew he was dangerous, Father. Mad, but dangerous. An insect stinging me with venom. Words sapping my strength. He had to be stopped. He could pull down the whole temple of truth. He could sunder the rock on which Peter had built the church. He was dangerous. And still it poured out of him. A never-ending flood of hate. Pouring so fast that finally I couldn't even understand the words he was shouting. And stopped hearing. Just watched his mouth chewing up and down on the evil, evil truths. His pig evil eyes full of hate. He had to be slaughtered. His body disappeared. It was fascinating. Suddenly his body disappeared. And he was just eyes and mouth and head. And the eyes and head disappeared. And he was just mouth. A mouth with crooked cigarette-stained teeth. And a whip of tongue lashing itself round words that I could no longer hear. Still flicking spit in my direction. But I could no longer feel.
because I also had disappeared. I was just aware of a hand. Not my hand, Father, though somehow it was vaguely attached to me. I was aware of this hand, finger walking across the table, brushing against the breadboard, pushing it aside, feeling for a handle, finding it, knowing it was the handle of a knife, and fingers curling round the handle. Not my fingers, Father, but somehow attached to the hand, and the hand turning the knife to lean it gently against this creature whose mouth is still chewing on sacrilege, spewing out blasphemy, to lean on it and move forward. And the mouth? The mouth stayed open, and it stopped chewing words, and I could hear again. But there was nothing to hear. So I studied the mouth closely, the sneering lips, the dirty twisted teeth, the tongue curving gently to make a scream that couldn't come. And deep in the throat, a spot of red that grew as I watched it, a soft, pretty pool, Father, fluid, moving, growing, the whirlpool higher and higher. I watched it, fascinated, as the epiglottis drowned and the pool touched his bottom teeth and his throat constricting to cough, his lips pulling over his teeth to make the shape for a cough, and I felt the splashes on my face as he coughed. And I was me again. And his face came back, and his piggy eyes were full of surprise, and then his body came back, and his waistcoat had a built-in handle that I was holding in my hand, and it looked pretty and neat and almost a part of the suit. But by now all his weight was on me, so I angled the knife, and slowly, so slowly, like a ship being launched, he slipped down the steel until he fell. Free. I was parched. My tongue touched my lips to try to moisten them, and there was something there, warm, thick, and salty. I realized that it was blood, his blood on my tongue, in my mouth, real blood. Not transubstantiation, not blood to wine, but real blood, Father. Swallow it, swallow it, swallow it down, damn you. You can't be sick before the altar of God, can you? So I swallowed it, Father, and finally felt a full grown-up member of the Catholic Church again. Then I walked out, and here I am, confessing. Ah, a big one. What? My penance? No absolution until I've handed myself over to the police? You don't understand, Father. You don't seem to understand. I didn't murder him, Father. Can't you see that? I've nothing to go to the police for. I didn't murder anybody. You did. But don't worry, Father. He wasn't a Catholic. He was just an insect. And insects don't count, do they? Unless you enjoy it, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost. Amen.
Priest Penitent by Wally K. Daly. Richard Briers was heard as the priest, and Tony Haygarth as the penitent. The play was produced by the BBC and presented by Earplay, the Radio Drama Production Center for Public Broadcasting.
Is made possible by grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. This is NPR, National Public Radio.